Welcome to Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we will take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandising, and the global fandom phenomenon that has shaped the landscape of science fiction for over five decades and counting. So step into our TARDIS and please enjoy our journey together here on Type 40. Now, as you know, Doctor Who fans, it's really difficult to kind of steer your own TARDIS just by yourself. So in here, in our time and relative dimensions in Space Machine, we have two very special guests and my co-hosts for this episode of Type 40. We have Mr. Kyle Wagner at one of the controls, but not exactly sure what the controls do. How are you, Kyle?
It's getting a little wibbly wobbly around here. But you know what? I know this episode's dealing with classic Who, specifically Tom Baker, and you guys are going to give me an education because I'm still working on my early thesis of everything classic Who, and I'm excited.
You know, that's a great thing about Doctor Who is no matter kind of like where your entry point is, you can find new content, and that's really exciting when it comes to fandom because sometimes fandom, you know, it's limited and you can only like revisit the old favorites and old faces, as a curator once said. So, also in this big box, this big mad box of ours, is our friend from across the pond, and I would say our Doctor Who aficionado, Mr. Dan Hadley. Dan, how are you, brother?
I was looking over my shoulder then, I was wondering who was going to walk in behind me. I'm great. I tell you what, though, this new TARDIS this week, are we going to change the desktop theme every week? This console room looks a little bit old.
He goes, are you saying that we changed it and you don't like it?
No, I quite like it. It's wood paneled and smells a little funny, but yeah. Well, I could be at home here, yeah.
I do love the wood panel TARDIS from back in the day.
Just myself. Takes a lot of more effort to polish.
Exactly.
But I miss the circles, guys. I like the circles. I like the speakers.
You like the circles. You know, yes. When you get more into the Baker era, you're going to appreciate the, what would you call that, Dan? Would you call that kind of like the ancillary TARDIS control room?
This is where Mr. Geek steps in. It's the secondary control room. The secondary console room. People will be shouting the secondary console room.
The secondary console room. It's kind of like a pub in a way.
Yeah.
It's very dark wood and brass. It's gorgeous. I love it. Anyway, I digress. So you're right, Kyle, as you have alluded to, and as you may have heard us dropping some hints about Tom Baker, we are here to talk about Tom Baker's Fourth Doctor's first season on Blu-ray. So before we do that, Kyle, would you let our fans know how they can tell us all of the different lore mistakes and details that we may have missed as we travel across social media?
Absolutely. Of course, and this is that fixed point in time that we have to hit every week. But you can find not only Type 40, but all the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network in the following places. Of course, on our homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, if you're going mobile, you can use the Podbean app on your mobile devices to find. Let's just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, if you don't use the Podbean app, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you have an Android device, you can use the Google Play app. Of course, on Instagram, you can find the Fandom Podcast Network at Fandom Podcast Network. And you can find this show, Type 40 Doctor Who, at Type 40. That's TYPE40DRWHO. And of course, on Facebook, we have the Type 40, a Doctor Who Fandom Podcast group page. We'd love for you to join the group and be part of this amazing community that we're trying to build here. And there'll be a link to that in the show notes of the page. And of course, too, if you want to email us, let us know how we're doing. Give us your opinions. Give us your thoughts. You can email us at type40doctorwho@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at type40doctorwho, again, spelled out TYPE40DRWHO. On Instagram, the same thing, at type40doctorwho. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Norman, where can people find you on Twitter and this other social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
And Dan, where can people find you out there in the land of social media?
Well, I'm on Instagram. You can follow me there at DanHadley_. And I'll probably be joining Twitter myself soon. Failing that, I am on Facebook. I'm never off Facebook for very long. Come and find me. Come and say hello. You know where we
absolutely
are.
And absolutely. And two, we got, if you need something to wear, you need something to support out in public, you know, and help us out by supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. Visit our Tee Public store at teepublic.com and just search for Fandom Podcast Network. You can find great shirts, pillows, laptop cases, stickers, even tapestries with logos from all the great shows at the Fandom Podcast Network. And coming very soon will be the Type 40 line. And of course, iTunes. You can always leave us reviews on iTunes. We'd love to get those. We'll read them on the show. Tell us how we're doing. Give us some thoughts, whether it's a 1-star or 5-star. We love getting all of your thoughts and opinions on what we're doing here at the Fandom Podcast Network. So with that, Norman, I've got my scarf ready. Can you take us into season one of the Tom Baker era of Doctor Who?
Absolutely. I hope that scarf isn't too warm for you down in Florida, because I know that you are probably coming into your like super, super warm season.
Yeah, well, you know, I won't say what else I'm wearing or not wearing.
Okay, well, we'll leave that up to the audience's imagination. Spoilers.
I couldn't resist.
Spoilers. So, yes, we are here to talk about Tom Baker, his first season as the Doctor on Blu-ray. Now, I was first notified about this on May 3rd, 2018. And as soon as that popped up into my notification box on Amazon, I punched the pre-order button so hard and knocked a hole in the universe. So I mean, I know that's a very hyperbolic, but I'm just like really excited. I was like, wow, Tom Baker on Blu-ray for the first time. And how much is this going to cost me and when? I don't care. Take my money. What's that meme out there, Kyle or Dan, you know, with what's his name from Futurama? Fry. Go ahead and take my money. Fry.
Yeah. To go, right. Take my money now.
I wanted it now, and as fast as Amazon is, it wasn't fast enough. I couldn't slingshot around a sun collapse time as we would in our Type 40. But Dan, when did you hear about the release of this, say for the UK release for this set?
Well, there'd been whispers for quite a while, but there are always whispers when it comes to Doctor Who. There's been whispers about putting Doctor Who onto Blu-ray for a few years, to tell you the truth. But I didn't really start believing them until around September, October time. And, you know, because you hear about, because the special features when they start filming those, word tends to get out. But you never know where it's going to land. You never know what shape it's going to take. And the Doctor Who collection on Blu-ray, as a global thing, as a whole new line, it's kind of more noise than I thought they would make over material that is obviously of a vintage, but it's fantastic to see the real push behind it, the care, the attention, the reception to it, how well it's doing, certainly in the charts in the UK. And just delighted, even if I'm a little bit worried about my bank balance over the next few years.
Well, I mean, that's a huge concern, not just for the Blu-ray sets, but I know that a lot of people are probably like, well, what do I do with all of the special edition DVDs that I have collected now? And we're going to get to that later on in the show. But Kyle, do you remember when you first heard of this? And was it something I'm not going to say you're not a Doctor Who fan of the classics, but you're not as steeped into, say, like the Tom Baker era, and that was from 1974 to 1981. When you saw something like this, you were like, I might get it, I might not get it, or it's the perfect time for me to actually collect all of this and have one cohesive set that I can binge watch like Netflix.
You know, I found out about it by seeing your post about it, because you tell me about it for your excitement. And it's something that is on my buy list. It's a matter of having the time to sit down and properly watch it. And I have every intent of getting this, because I think it's going to be a great way for me to sit down and really get caught up on Tom Baker. I mean, I do have experience with Tom Baker. A lot of the PBS Doctor Who here in the States that I watched were Tom Baker episodes. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, it's a while ago for me. And I know the importance of Tom Baker in the Doctor Who fandom. And I think this is brilliant that they're doing this. And I really do hope this is something that the BBC continues to do, not only with the Fourth Doctor, but eventually as they build those collections of the other Doctors. And I do understand that there are some issues with certain episodes of just the quality and finding missing episodes of Doctor Who. But I do hope this is something that they do continue to do, because I think this is something the fans of Doctor Who deserve, is to actually have legitimate season sets of their Doctors. And what better way to start off with it, with the man who I think for a whole generation of Doctor Who fans is the Doctor in their mind. They might have been fans of Sylvester McCoy or Davidson, or, but I think for a lot of people, Tom Baker is the Doctor.
Well, I mean, that's fair to say, and I think that's probably one of my first questions I want to ask both you guys with Tom Baker, because we have so many popular modern Doctors, you know, like with David Tennant and Matt Smith, and I know that their sets have already been, you know, well, I guess, well marketed and you know, purchased by many, many, many people. Why Tom Baker, Dan, do you think? Why start with him? And why make this giant push? Now, I don't know over in Great Britain if this happened, but one of the things that really made me stand up and take notice about how popular not just Doctor Who is, but Tom Baker is that they actually did something here in the United States called a Fathom event. And if you've never really attended one of these, it's basically a special viewing service that movie theaters host, where you can actually watch shows like this. In this case, it's the uncut version of Genesis of the Daleks from season one. In the theater, recut for the theater with a special interview with Tom Baker. So that, to me, says that how big his impact was in Doctor Who and why they chose him to launch this completely repackaged version of his first season. Do you think that was obviously the right choice? Is it obvious, or is it something that they know they just have that kind of branding power behind?
Okay. Well, let's frame this. Let's think of it like this. Here and now, when we look at Doctor Who, there is still, you know, as Kyle was just pointing to, there's still that slight dividing line between the classic and the new series, where, you know, not everybody travels between the two. There's that little threshold. But there was a time, you know, it's not really that long ago, when Doctor Who was still was a television show from the past, and the dust was starting to settle a little on it as a whole, on the classic series. And when you looked back on Doctor Who, obviously this was pre-internet, when you talk about Doctor Who with your friends at the pub, maybe Doctor Who would crop up into conversation. When you started talking about Doctor Who, the angle that everybody had was, oh, yes, you'd start talking about a story or a time or whatever, but it was like, was that, they'd define it by, was that before or after Tom Baker's Doctor? That is an indication of how huge he was in the role, how important. I mean, you know, obviously he was there for longer than everybody else playing it, but it was more than that. It was more than that. The impact of where he picked it up, and when he put it down again, when he put down the sonic screwdriver again, and you know, it's no accident that when we had the 50th anniversary, for example, that still, despite by that point, you know, 8 years of brand new Doctor Who, when the BBC started putting together their 50th anniversary branding, the 50 was made up partially of Tom Baker's scarf running all around as a zero. And even children, I mean, the man hasn't played this part for 37 years on screen properly. And yet, you know, I entertain children sometimes at events, and I've got on my board of my work behind me, there's a picture of Tom Baker's Doctor done in the style of The Simpsons. And every single time, there'll be some child who'll come up and point and say, it's Doctor Who. There's no TARDIS there, no Dalek. It's Doctor Who. That says a lot.
I mean, that's kind of the cultural saturation level of Doctor Who in Great Britain. So, and not so much maybe in the US, although every single time I talk about Doctor Who, most of the sound bites that I hear are, you mean the guy with the scarf?
Yeah.
You know, So as kind of in marketing, there are things called love marks, and you know, people, whatever photocopy technology you use, people always call it a Xerox. Whatever tissue that you use is always called a Kleenex. I think for a long time, until really the popularity of the new series was able to saturate the new market, this was always Doctor Who. Teeth and curls, the guy with the floppy hat, or the guy with the scarf. You know, and I think that does it's much credit to Tom Baker's performance as anything else. But because there was this relaunch of the Blu-ray, they really did something that was above and beyond, say, just a repackaging and an upscaling of the DVD quality. One of the things I wanted to kind of like take a look at right now are some of the features that are going into remastering an old favorite like Tom Baker. So there are the five quote-unquote serials, because each one of these episodes, if you want to call them episodes in total, were about anywhere between 4 to 6 half-an-hour episodes, right? Probably about six? About four, right, Dan?
The longest one is a six-parter, yeah.
Right. So, and these can be, I guess, in your mind's eye, they can always be turned into like one giant omnibus story that they did in this particular Blu-ray release with the Ark in Space and Genesis of the Daleks. So the five serials contained in the first season here on Blu-ray, you have Robot, which was Tom Baker's first appearance, and you'll get a little bit of John Pertwee's regeneration scene at the very beginning, as you did in his final episode with Tom Baker at the very end. You have the Ark in Space, the Suntaran Experiment, Genesis of the Daleks, and Revenge of the Cybermen. They were re-encoded for 1080i with the transfer in 1.32:1, which is kind of the standard release as it was released in the BBC originally. But the one thing that when I was watching this, and have either of you guys had a chance to really kind of delve into this Blu-ray set, or was I the first to kind of put like the super extra special expensive rush on mine to get it?
I think you've got it beat, but unfortunately for Dan, there's a reason why he hasn't been able to get his hands on it yet.
Don't rub it in.
That's true.
No, I haven't picked it up yet. And of course, you know, there are the disc issues there that we've heard about. But you're the first. I mean, I've been through. There was a question, obviously, as to whether anybody should. You know, Doctor Who fans tend to be completists, and once we start a line, we tend to want to buy them all. It is a commitment. All joking aside, mm-hmm. So it was reading down that list, as you've said, of specs and special features that, you know, it'll either convince you or not. And I take a lot of convincing when it comes to parting with money, certainly on that volume over what could be a few years. And yeah, the special features are, they're very seductive.
Now, Dan, did you buy any of the DVDs like this? Because there were DVDs, and then there were the special edition re-releases of the DVDs, which were fairly recent, and then now. So it's not like the BBC isn't kind of like dipping into the well, you know, as they have before. This is marketing, and this is a brand. They're there to make money. So, you know, you have to offer something to the new fans that will entice them, like yourself, like myself, to part with their money. But have you collected the DVDs in the past?
Yes, I have. Yeah, this could potentially be a triple dip for me. I collected all the DVDs, and when they returned to the range and issued some special editions with new features, I bought those again. I think there was about 12 re-releases. So yeah, I collected all of the DVDs, but going backwards through my timeline, I was there. I bought every single VHS release too, and I've still got those in the loft. I also own every single Target book, which, you know, before the videos, that was, and when I was hungry to experience these stories, it was the only way to go. It was on the printed page. Got all those too. So you could look at it as the fourth time potentially for me going into this. You know, I don't do it lightly, but they're aware. They know. They know that Doctor Who is one of the most important brands and product lines and revenue streams, and they know that the fans will call them out if they don't feel that something represents value for money. And they can boast about, it's one thing to boast about specs, but the people who work on the Doctor Who range are experts in their field at both sound and picture. And it's, but to some who haven't got top of the range televisions, those kind of things maybe aren't so important. You know, you've got to come at it from a different angle as well. And look at that VAM, that value added material, and you know, try and cater for everybody as best you can and still keep it affordable. And I feel that that's what they have done with this set. And I was initially, there was a bit of trepidation on my part, but I've been won over. And, you know, even if it's a question up to a certain point, as soon as you see that box set, that's a very pretty box set, Norm.
Yes, it is. And, oh, you know what? Actually, let me segue in from there, because one of the I was talking about this with Kyle, and since this has nothing to do with the actual contents, and I will get to the contents in a second for the listeners who are like, get to the contents already. There are two very distinctive differences in the packaging from the US release to the UK release. And for me as a collector, and Dan, actually, you and I actually had a differencing opinion on this. I feel a little slighted looking at the US release because it's very compact, it's sleek. All of the discs have the same artwork as the cover of the release. And it's, for me, when I saw the UK release, I'm like, because I have both of them right now on my desk. Yes, I'm ridiculous that way. The UK release is very robust. It's thick. It has a really nice insert with really nice artwork. Each disc is coded to the specific episode artwork of that episode. So you'll have the robot on disc one. You know, you'll have a picture of the Arkans base on disc two and so on and so forth. So looking at the dollar value of both of these being somewhat equal, I feel like the US release is very thin compared to the robustness of a collectible of the UK release. But you felt differently, Dan.
You can tell me. Did you get disc envy? No.
disc.
I didn't feel differently myself. I agree. I think the UK package, the UK packaging, in my experience, like I say, I judge value for money with the eye. And to me, that represents better value for money. Something substantial and lavish, and particularly the little things like the disc art. So I felt the same as yourself, but I went into a few home entertainment forums and found that there were people in my territory who were, oh, have you seen the size of this box set? The whole collection's going to be huge. I'm going to need to buy a new bookcase. Oh, why can't we have a little plastic Amaray case that can fit into the smallest possible space in my home? So It's funny, isn't it? There are all types of fans, you know, and I feel that way about some things. I'm a big believer. Sorry, Kyle, I know you feel differently, but I'm a physical media guy still. But there are plenty of lines of product that I want them to be as small on my shelf as possible. But when it comes to Doctor Who is special.
Sure. And Kyle, like, I know that you are a digital format, you know, supporter. I am too. And I agree with you too, Dan. When it comes to certain things, you know, you can see on camera, for those of you who are listening, you can't, but you see my Lord of the Rings collection. You know, that's something that I want physically, that kind of collection. So when you saw this, Kyle, on advertised in both ways, and you saw the kind of like the layout of the UK set that's been so lavishly done, when you look at both of those, monetary wise being equal, I mean, why do you think that these are being treated so differently in two different markets?
Well, I think one, and this is first and foremost, and we've had this conversation, the fact that we still in this day and age have region coding is ridiculous.
Amen.
Yeah, it is.
There is no reason for it with the way technology is now. But I think too, the reason why you have the differences is because you're talking about the Great Britain being the home of Doctor Who, and they're going to go all out there. And as popular as Doctor Who is in the States, you know, I think that just for distribution in the States, they went with a little cheaper route. I mean, it's sad to say. And I think it's a huge mistake on this part. I think the problem with it is that here in the States, they're saying, okay, well, we can make more money by doing this, where I think over in the UK, it's more of, no, we want to give the fans of this everything that we can. And there's so many. I mean, for me, if I could go out and buy the UK version, that's the version I would choose to get. I mean, I've seen what you've got with that, Norman. It's a beautiful set. It's something that you would want to have on display.
What you might not realize, guys, is that Blu-ray took a little longer to get to the UK. And it's nowhere near as popular as a format as it is in North America, certainly. And it hasn't sort of found its way into every UK home. And it's settled as a sort of collector's thing anyway. So I think part of that, and so I don't think these sets in my country will be marketed in maybe in the same numbers. I think there may be, obviously the States is a much bigger place, but I think that's part of it, that it already falls into that collector's market. So to treat it with that sort of lavish collector's set from the outside could be part of that too. So yeah, I wouldn't take it personally.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense. I've been on Amazon.com in the UK, and there are great steelbooks, say like on The Power of the Daleks and Spearhead from Space and Shada, which we'll cover later on. But I want to get into the special features here, not too deeply, because this may not make a lot of sense right now for people that don't have the set. But on the U.S. set, on the back cover, there's a fantastic shot of Tom Baker and Elizabeth Sladen as Sarah Jane Smith and Ian Martyr. The companions, you know, as a Harry. He may be a doctor, but he's not the doctor. How's that, Dan? Am I getting closer?
It's getting better every
step. Better?
So by Christmas, nobody will be able to tell the difference. They'll think that we've got him in for an interview, Kyle.
Yeah. If I can only get to like John Culshaw's quality, but that's a completely other thing. So on the special features listed here on the back of the cover art, it has Tom Baker in conversation, a brand new candid 1 hour interview with the Fourth Doctor, which is phenomenal because he is, I believe, 84 or 85 now. Cool. 85?
80. Yeah, I think it's 84.
84. Yeah. So he sounds and looks fantastic. Actually, maybe it's because of his most current involvements, you know, with Big Finish and doing these things. It's kind of given him a little bit of a regeneration also, getting his kind of like excitement level back into the franchise. But probably the most, like you said, VAM, value added material to this are the behind the sofa features, because there are two groups on Behind the Sofa. Basically, it's Tom Baker and, let me see, I want to read this right, Sarah Sutton, who is Elizabeth Sladen's daughter. I'm sorry, Sadie Miller, who's Elizabeth Sladen's daughter, and Philip Hinchcliffe. Now, they're on one sofa looking at all of these episodes and kind of like doing their commentary per episode, per disc. Also, on another completely different couch, you have Louise Jameson, who played Leela, you had Janet Fielding, who played Tegan Javanka, and you had Sarah Sutton, who played Nyssa, all together. And let me tell you something, and Dan, you may already know this. Janet Fielding's a handful on the commentary. So those alone, those commentaries are worth the price of admission. Because
so given the choice, you'd rather be sat on the other sofa.
Well, of course, Tom, yeah, unless I'm sitting next to Louise Jameson, which is a completely other thing, right? But watching Tom Baker, and especially he and Philip Hinchcliffe going through these memories, there's a lot going behind their eyes, a lot of really good memories, and especially when Tom sees Elizabeth Sladen on camera and looks at Sadie with such love and respect and longing, you know, for Elizabeth's, just her presence and her spirit on the show is really, really remarkable to behold. There were a couple times where I was like on the verge of tears. So if you want, for anything, that's worth picking this DVD up for. You have new making of documentaries for the Centauran Experiment and Revenge of the Cybermen. You have remastered 5.1 surround sound for the Ark in Space and Genesis of the Daleks, which are the two omnibus versions that are offered in this Blu-ray set. When I say omnibus, basically they have taken out the serialization of these episodes and turned them into one-shot movies. Genesis of the Daleks, of course, which they used in the Fathom events that was only a few weeks ago from this recording. They also have, and here's an interesting thing for the both of you, because this is something that they did with Star Trek recently with the original series remaster and the CBS TNG remaster, the Next Generation remaster. They have options for splicing in updated visual effects for Revenge of the Cybermen. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that in some ways that takes the charm out of the original, or since it's just an optional effect and not a forced option, that gives people kind of like a chance to watch the show with something of a little bit of a facelift? How do you guys feel about that? Dan, let's start with you.
I feel that it's, this isn't the first time they've done this. A few of the DVDs boasted the same option. I feel as long as the original is there to access to, then it can only be a good thing. There are enough barriers already to people consuming vintage content, particularly black and white content, that if you can eliminate those barriers and bring more people to the stories, to the world, then you should. If it's affordable, you should. And I love that they're doing this. The people who the effects, you know, doesn't make them bad people, where the special effects do and can take them out of the story, which is a huge pity. You know, nobody wants to see these programs remade. They are precious as they are, but if it gets people who wouldn't otherwise watch pressing that play button, maybe that buying the set to press the play button in the first place, I feel it's got to be a good thing. I certainly, if it was an option where you couldn't see them as originally broadcast, maybe I'd be singing a different tune. But no, I'm all for it. You know, the Star Trek line did this around 10 or 11 years ago with every episode of the original series. They did that beautifully, and I'm hoping this is going to follow suit.
So, Kyle, as a new fan to the Tom Baker era, is this something that you feel like, yeah, that's a reason why I would also like to buy this, so that I can see the differences?
I think it's a good thing to have. I agree with Dan in the aspect that as long as you have the original version, because we've had that in the States as well, where they've, with Star Trek, with Star Wars, where, you know, they've digitally enhanced something, but a lot of people still would like to have that original version because that's what they remember and that's what they want. I think this, by giving people the option, is the best way to go. I mean, I would like to see this with some modern effects just to see. But I think it's also something to where you have to watch it in its original content, because to fully appreciate it, you've got to see what they were working with at the time and what they had available to them at the time. And I think that's one of the things that makes any classic sci-fi, whether you go back to a Doctor Who or you go back to like a Buck Rogers or a Battlestar Galactica original series, it's, you appreciate what they did considering the effects they were working with at the time. And I think that's something that's very important to science fiction in general.
That's a very good point. And I think that's one of the things that when we go through referencing classic episodes, like, you know, all the way going back to William Hartnell, to Patrick Troughton, John Pertwee, and Tom Baker, especially, since that is kind of like the first wave. You know, that's the first technical quarter of Doctors. You know, that was the first 4 out of 12 before we're talking about Jodie Whittaker. So that's the first quarter of Doctors. The BBC was operating under the auspices of a certain budgetary constraint. But I think that's also part of the charm of going all the way back. You know, when you go back to the 1950s TV, when you're looking at, let's say, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Bonanza, the Westerns, all that kind, and then going into Star Trek, sometimes you actually want to see it because these are time capsules of broadcast network TV of an era gone by. So you don't want things to be so seamlessly integrated and new that you're not really appreciating the struggle of how these things kind of came to pass. They did that really well. They covered that really well in the 50th anniversary, The Adventures in Space and Time, where you're seeing the struggles that they had to go through to get these things on TV. I mean, literally, one of the things, I think it was in, it was in Genesis of the Daleks, you're seeing like a countdown clock, and it's literally like a cardboard cutout spray painted. You could see the corrugate print. And I love that, because that's what they had to work with. So again, with I know it's tougher for newer fans to go back to some of these, but really kind of like take that with the grain of salt and in the spirit of what's why it was intended to look a certain way, because that's all they really had to work with. Now, we did mention, and Dan, you did mention that there was an issue with the printing of some of these DVDs. I want to let you know that, and I say this is wibbly-wobbly production issues with the UK set. There were two discs, or there are two discs on the UK set, and I'm still trying to confirm this, if this is the same for the US set. There are errors on disc 3, The Centauran Experiment, and disc 5, Revenge of the Cybermen, in this set. Now, the BBC's response to this was, I guess it was published first on Blu-ray.com, because they pretty much, I think they brought this to light. In order to obtain a replacement, please email proof of purchase to this DVD support line in the form of a receipt from the retailer. If you do not have a receipt from the retailer, please email a picture of the product with your full name and postal address in view. The estimated time frame for the replacement to be available is 4 to 5 weeks. Please allow some time for the replacement disc to reach you. Now, in light of this information, Dan, I believe you told us either offline or on a message that they have pulled back on the distribution of the set in Great Britain.
Not that I know of, but they have they have stepped up the production of it so that corrected discs will be in stores, in places like HMV and the few other outlets that still stock it physically, and obviously out to places where you can order in from, to make sure that corrected discs are in those outlets as soon as possible. So, you have to wait 4 or 5 weeks for corrected discs to come in the post. The odds are that they'll be in stores before that. So it could be a little bit of a gamble there. And it's really up to the individual. The fault may not be detectable to you depending on the kit that you've got in. At least the option's there. At least the point of contact is there, and the BBC's recognised there is a problem, and they're addressing it. It's not the first time this has happened. It's unbelievable that it's happened on the launch product of a new line. It's not as if they're new to producing discs, but mistakes do happen, and the audience is loyal and they know that they're going to want it. They're going to want it just so, just right. And they care enough to make sure that you can have that if you pop your discs in the post and play the waiting game a little.
And there's something to be said about completionists and collectors of that degree, because I think that some people actually would keep their set sealed as a misprint collectible.
It's entirely possible. I know a few people who buy two copies of things and want to keep sealed and want to, even DVDs and Blu-rays.
In fact, I think you're talking to two of us right now. I know that Kyle, you raise your hand if you've never done that. I don't think anyone can. I don't think any one of us can.
I don't do that, but a guy that I know who may well be listening to this show, actually, a guy that I know does that. And I understand why he does it.
So Kyle, do you think that you'll wait then now to get your UK set, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I think I would hold off, give them a chance to make the correction. In this case, just because it's a misprint, I'm not one of those kind of completists. Mm-hmm. But it happens. It happened here with the Superman collection.
Right. Yeah. And that was a multi-disc one also. I think I had to send in, that was the Superman that covered like all the way to Brandon Routh's. Or did it have Cavill's first movie? Did it have Man of Steel in it?
It did not have Man of Steel in it. I don't think so. I think it went through basically the Donner universe of Superman.
Right. Yeah, that was a pretty big snafu. So one of the last things I want to talk about, and it's actually something that bothers me more than probably any of these misprints, because we're fans of certain eras, every era of Doctor Who has their marketing appeal, has their stamp of approval, has their design aesthetic, and has their logo. Dan, I think you know where I'm going with this. One of the things that I felt was a little, I don't know, maybe disingenuous is not the right word, but something that it's very sensitive to a lot of fans, especially of Doctor Who in the classics era, especially with Tom Baker, John Pertwee and Tom Baker, since it was their logo. The choice of branding it with the new Doctor Who marketing brand and logo, and with the omission of the Tom Baker classic colorful diamond logo anywhere on the packaging, from either on the packaging itself or somewhere even diminutive, somewhere in the front cover art or the back cover art, or even on the discs themselves. There isn't a single reference to his era's marketing brand. And I find that a little irresponsible because of how thorough the representation is of all of the bonus material. Now, it's not to say that it's not in the bonus material, because they did a fabulous job doing a small documentary on how that tunnel, the time tunnel and the diamond tunnel, was created, which is worth your while watching. But I felt that it would have been nice, once all is said and done and you have all of these seasons like across your bookshelf, to see these things split up in the era and logo of we have. Because you have this era, you have the John Nathan Turner kind of like disco logo. I mean, that's fair to say. And then you have kind of like the new, the Russell T. Davies logo. And now you're going into the Stephen Moffat logo and now the Chris Chibnall logo. So I kind of wanted that represented here. I might be just a little sensitive about it. Some people are like, who cares? It's just a logo. But Dan, you're a classic fan like me. How did you feel about not seeing that on the packaging?
Yeah, it's obviously it's part of hammering it home to people that this is new product. The new series will be with us soon, and that logo is being rolled out onto everything. And I love the new logo. I really do. I think it's great, but. And it looks particularly good in the sort of negative space. Mm-hmm. So I understand the appeal of that right across the line, and them eliminating that barrier again between the new series and the classic. I think that's wise. However, there are two sides to every story, and the simple fact is that historically we know this happens. Whatever is the Doctor Who logo now won't be the Doctor Who logo in 3, 4, 5 years' time. Are they really going to get out 26 box sets in the next 4 or 5 years and have them all look consistent across the shelf? I can't see that happening. Not to this spec. Not if they want to maintain that sort of showcase, that this grand treatment, that, and give that to every season of Doctor Who, because every season deserves this sort of fanfare. So I think potentially we're going to end up with a Doctor Who collection of Blu-rays that now could have 2 or 3 different logos, which is self-defeating. Whereas you'll notice on the UK packaging that we've been drooling over earlier on, it comes with an outer slip card anyway. So you'd think, well, the option could be to the shop-facing side to that slip card does bear the new logo for simple marketing sense. And that underneath that, there's your diamond logo for the collectors who do intend on buying them all. I just think it's always better to give your customers more options, particularly if it's not going to cost any more money. Mm-hmm. I understand that underneath the slip card, we do get clean art, which, you know, as a graphic designer, I love that. I like having the options of clean art.
Oh, but yeah.
There's not clean art on the spine. And, you know, still, that would have been nice. Just say white out of black. It didn't have to be the full 4-color version of that logo. It could have been a simple, flat version of it. And yeah, we could have got that built across our shelves. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll offer that for later releases, because we're not the only two people that have picked up on this norm. So maybe they will correct that. So yeah, it's a little short-sighted, but hey, there are bigger things to worry about, aren't there? It's But at the end of the day, they're catering this. And there are people out there who, as you say, don't don't care. It's all about what's on the discs. And, you know, but different strokes for different folks.
Bigger kippers to fry is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Kyle, this is actually an interesting point too, because I know how we feel about, you know, some of these smaller details, but Kyle, going into looking at these two different box sets, and I just want to make sure that the listeners know that one of the major distinctions between these two box sets, aside from what Dan and I were just talking about, on the US set, it says Tom Baker Complete Season 1. On the UK set, it says The Collection Season 12. Do you think in any way, because you're coming from a newer perspective, do you think in any way that that's confusing, or do you think that they specifically did that per market of where these things are being distributed?
I think it's definitely per market, because you look at, for the States, especially, most people associate Doctor Who with the modern Who. I mean, there's the classic fans out there, but I think the majority of Doctor Who fans, and I think this is the way the BBC has marketed it because of BBC America, when that was originated and things like that, they see it as the start of modern Who is the start of Who in an aspect. So I think that's why they did that. That's why it's a differentiation. I think it's easier for people over in the United Kingdom to understand the breakdown and how Doctor Who is. But this is when we get into timey-wimey stuff and trying to sort out Doctor Who seasons.
You know, it's funny that they just don't say Tom Baker Complete Season 1. Tom Baker's name is the largest font size on the front cover, even larger than the Doctor Who logo, because I think that they want to make this huge distinction that this is Tom Baker. On the UK packaging, they don't even mention his name, you know, because I think that obviously, culturally, and I don't want to sound out of turn, Dan, but I think that 9.999 times people are going to know who Tom Baker is on your neck of the woods. Is that fair to say?
That's fair. That's fair. Certainly anybody who'd go into a store and, you know, would be browsing that section of the DVDs, or even have just popped it in the search field onto Amazon. You'd know what you were looking for. He's a striking cover artwork. And then of course, there's what I was saying earlier on, it cuts into this too. The fact that Blu-ray here is already a collector's field item, then selling it's based on a collection that is of so many parts potentially, appeals to that buyer. Whereas,
absolutely,
I think that's part of it too.
One of the things that one of the last things I want to cover here, and maybe it's just because, you know, as completionists, it's hard to figure out, like, what do we do with previous versions of what we've collected? Because there's only so much shelf space to go around anymore, you know, with everything. I mean, you know, there was a point in time where trying to get the VHS tapes, you know, in distribution from, say, your Blockbuster Video or your Suncoast Video, you know, things like that nature, at least over here in the States, was very hard to do. I remember my most prized and precious possession at one point in time, which happens to be my favorite Tom Baker episode, was The Pyramids of Mars, because it was like the only VHS tape that was like offered at the time. And like right after that was like, you know, Robots of Death and stuff like, you know. So what do people do with these collections that they have spent so much money on and just don't know what to do with anymore, if this is in fact the most definitive collection? Do you keep them? Do you sell them? Is there a resale market for these, for like the ultimate collectors? Because some of those special editions, they're out of print now and they're going for 2-3 times the value on eBay. Is this a good time for people to dump them like stock and short sell them for future profit? Kyle, I mean, this isn't about the content. This is now about, you know, playing the market.
Yeah, no, I think this is a time. I think depending on what sets you have, I mean, especially the VHS sets, you have those completists out there who've been looking for some of that stuff and they can't find it because you can't find VHS anymore. And I think that's a way to go. I think it's a mixed bag, and it's something I think a lot of people are dealing with. Not in the aspect of, I mean, I've been going a lot of digital, and yet I still have physical copies of some of this stuff, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying to create space. So I'm finding, how do I get rid of my physical copies of certain things? But I think it's a debate. My feeling though, is that for a lot of people who have invested that kind of time and stuff. They want to keep that stuff because it is a true collection for them and they're something they're proud of.
Yeah. I mean, Dan, you're not going to release any of your stuff, are you? Just so that I can find it on eBay and buy it, which was my ultimate plan.
You're talking to a guy who's still got all those VHS tapes in the loft. They're not going anywhere.
Oh, darn it.
But, you know, it is a serious question. This is something that plays on people's minds. And, you know, it's something worth talking about. What I will offer caution with this Blu-ray collection, they're taking the time and the opportunity to, as they create new special features, to move the special features around. For example, if you've got your DVD of Genesis of the Daleks, and why wouldn't you have? It's fantastic. There are several features on that that aren't in the new Blu-ray set, the Dalek tapes documentary being the standout of those. Now, the guys in charge of the Blu-rays, Russell Minto, if you're listening to this, I can't remember which one it is, have said, you know, we're taking the opportunity to shuffle these features around and put them sometimes where they might fit better, just might feel a little more in keeping with the general content. So if you love the Dalek tapes and you can't be without that special feature, you have to hang on to your DVD of Genesis of the Daleks until it turns up elsewhere. You know, and you've seen the standard of these special features, Norm, you certainly have. Mm-hmm. People listening to this show, they're going to know too. These are market-leading DVDs. The standard of the production that goes into these features, it's fantastic, certainly network TV standard. So you're going to want to hang on to them for the time being, probably forever. If it's not a big thing for you and you don't mind playing that waiting game, you know, you can pop them onto eBay for people who are maybe, mind you, like you say, some of them have been deleted, so it's different kettle of fish. But for people who maybe are more curious about one doctor or one story, I do know people who, when the VHS range was winding down, you know, some fantastic people, it's a brilliant idea, who gave away their VHS tapes to the local children's hospital or sort of youth club. How old am I? Oh God, I'm stuck in a time warp, listeners. I do apologize. But who gave them away to such places so that these stories, you know, particularly at the Children's Hospital, could be discovered by a whole new generation, or just kids who can slam these discs in because they've watched everything else or listened to everything else, and if they're not allowed their phone on the ward or whatever. And whole new fans can be brought in that way. So there are options. And, you know, maybe you're very green and you just want to put something back into the environment. There's always that option. It's a blasphemy, but I've got to, you know, it's only fair to say people might want to recycle them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's good advice from both of you, because there are, you know, collectibles out there that are worth holding on to just because they may not have added some type of special feature. There are completionists out there that want every version of it. So, you know, the bottom line, that's your fandom to navigate and to govern. And however you want to do it, there's no right or wrong way. It just really depends on how much you want to spend. So I just wanted to sum up that I'm really excited about this Blu-ray feature set that is coming out for both markets. And once we nail down the replacement discs, and hopefully there aren't any issues with the US set. I haven't heard anything yet. Maybe one of you listeners out there can educate us and say, then we found something, and we can get that process for replacements rolling. But I just want to say thanks, Dan, and thanks, Kyle. We're going to wrap things up here for this episode of Type 40. But aside from discussing Doctor Who here on Type 40 for the Fandom Podcast Network, you might also enjoy listening to all of the different podcasts that we have here for your pleasure. So please come back after this jump and this little piece we put together for you that lets you know everything that's happening on the network, and we'll be back for our clothing thoughts. Wow, where's my head? Closing thoughts after the break.
Hey, Kevin,
I hear you're one of the Fandom Podcast Network's co-founders.
I heard the same rumor about you too, Kyle. Like the Three Musketeers, we would be incomplete without our third member and co-founder, Norman.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be part of the Fandom Podcast Network with you two. Kyle, why don't you start us off and let everyone know what great shows we have on the network.
Absolutely. Starting with our flagship show on the network, we have Culture Clash, your weekly fandom news show covering everything, news, reviews, and whatever crazy things we can come up with. Of course, we also have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shematula, and Chris High. Kevin, what else do we have on the network?
Kyle, we also have Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. Also, if you're a hard rock music fan, I host the Hair Metal podcast as we rediscover the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. Norman, we're not done yet. What else have we got on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Well, Kevin, you and I co-host Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast covering all things Highlander. And I also co-host with you, Kevin, and Kyle, and other special guests, Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery, and the Orville podcast. But Kyle, last and certainly not least, what are the other shows on the network?
Well, for all you movie fans out there, this podcast is for you. We have Couch Potato Theater, covering cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. And for you football fans, we have this show for you, The End Zone, giving you all the great mediocre fantasy football advice you can get and covering everything the NFL. And finally, you Doctor Who fans out there, we have Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom podcast. Now, Kevin, can you tell everyone how to find all these great programs on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Sure, Kyle. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at the fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram under Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPodNetwork.
Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on tpublic.com for our store, where you can find all our shows and their logos and great t-shirts and other fun items. Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes and leave us a review.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and most importantly, enjoy your fandom.
So, gentlemen, as we're finishing up our conversation about this fantastic Blu-ray set, I want to ask you one specific thing, especially you, Dan, because I know that you know these episodes really well. With one answer, what episode are you most excited to watch with all the special features involved?
Right. You devil. I'm
Sea Devil, sir. Sea Devil.
I think I'm gonna go for Robot. I love Robot, and it could be my favorite of the five. I think the mixture of location work and studio work in that, all the special effects work involved, you know, in camera. To do with green screen, you know, some of it's quite notorious, but that story for me is next to perfect, full of colourful characters, and to see, you know, we were talking about it earlier on, to see with our own two eyes, Tom Baker's Doctor take shape in across those four episodes, because it really does, you know, there's a whole sort of arc, not just to this particular season, but to the 7 years that Tom Baker played the Doctor. There's a kind of arc to it. But here, in those four episodes, what's set there, it's so formed, and it's just a delight to watch to Terence Dick's script. You know, he met Tom Baker apparently quite briefly, was struck by his personality and his sort of eccentricity, even really, you know, half the age that he is now. And I think you can see that, you can detect it, and you can see the perfect blending of the material to the actor. And with everything else going on around it, that's the one. That's the standout for me. My only problem now is I've got to wait, whereas I'm so tempted to go up and get that DVD out, watch it directly after I say goodbye to you good people. Mm. But I'm not going to. I'm going to wait for that set. And yeah, I'm sure it'll all be a feast for the eyes, all 20 episodes, all five stories. But Robot's the one for me.
Now, I can't argue that. I've done Robot and I've done the special features. And yes, they have a really interesting segment on how they were doing chroma key effects in camera back then. Wow. Yeah. Talk about an actual technical challenge that was happening on the fly. Kyle, I know that you're getting like just introduced to this particular era of the Doctor. Are there any, just by osmosis or just by understanding, you know, who Tom Baker is and some of his more popular episodes, are there any episodes that you're looking forward to seeing for the very first time, or maybe you've already seen some of these?
I have one word for you, Norman. Mm. Exterminate.
Legendary, right?
Genesis.
You will watch it. You will watch it.
Genesis of the Daleks. I mean, that is one I'm actually familiar with, and I can't wait to revisit that.
Yes.
Many believe that's the story that's where the Time War kind of starts. You could look at it that way.
Yeah.
Come in on that, if you can connect that to what you know, what comes later. Because I always try to tell people, you know, and to underline the connective tissue stretching across all Doctor Who. Yeah, this is sort of the opening shot of the Time War, and you'll see that in scene one. But yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that in some point in time in the future or the past of this podcast, depending on which way we fly the Type 40, we'll be doing an extensive look at the chronology of the Time War, and you're right, this might be ground zero for it. So this is very exciting. There's so much to say, but we must get going, and we must hit the stop button here. I don't want to. Do you guys? I don't want to, but we should.
Yes. Well, you know, the spoilers.
We can go back. We can do it all again.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
We can work the timeline.
So we're going to dematerialize here, folks. And I just want to let you know that we are really grateful that you're all tuning in to the show. This is your show as it is much ours. And we would love to hear your feedback. Make sure that you go back to earlier on in the show where you hear our contact information. And let us know what you would like to hear, because we're on this journey together. There's plenty of room in our Type 40 for everybody, because, as you know, a TARDIS is always bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. So in saying that, I'm Norm, on behalf of my co-hosts Kyle and Dan. Thanks everyone here listening to the Type 40 Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. And for all of you Tom Baker fans, I'm going to leave you with this. Mother, mother. I feel sick. Send for the doctor. Quick, quick, quick.